In its quest to provide an open forum for discussion of controversial issues, this station allows hosts and their guests to express themselves without any significant censorship. You're advised that any views expressed by the hosts or their guests are not necessarily the views of Tugi Entertainment or its partners.
Broad topics, broad minds, broad hosts, but not just for broads. This is Broadscast with Kim Goldman and Jackie McDougal.
Hello, Kim Goldman.
I feel so, you know when you go to the therapist office and you always sit in the same exact spot?
Yes.
Okay. We switched seats tonight.
Yes.
And I'm so uncomfortable over
you
here.
You are? I love to mix things up.
I don't.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you're going to get a different kind of therapy from me
one
tonight.
One of us is going to be on our game. Hey, so we have a very important show tonight, and I'm so, like, thank you, Kim, first of all, for producing it pretty much on your own because life has been insane, and I don't want to say excited, but I'm really
looking forward
to, I mean, I think it's very important. We're going to talk about, child sexual abuse and, but how to spot it and what to do. And I just think that, when you produce shows, they're so much more important. And then when I do it, it's like, woo, Tammy Pescatelli in the house, you know?
No, so. Not one bit, but thank you.
You're like the Oprah to my Arsenio. I know.
Really?
I don't know why. I know.
Really? That's where you're going to go? You're going to compare me to Oprah?
Oh.
Wow.
Oh, the funny thing is, that's the insult, not the I'm Arsenio. That's that. Anyway, sorry. I'll take that back. Things have been, crazy, as you know, and we've been IMing because you're working a lot and I'm working a lot and kids and I have to say I'm spending a lot more time than I ever thought I would be reading 50 Shades of Grey and playing Words with Friends. But
really, you could do all that with Karen, your big old executive editor or editor in chief, whatever you are.
Well, at like 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's my time now.
Ooh.
So,
and Jeff's time, perhaps.
that's up about 10:30. No. But I just, the way things are right now and how crazy they are, I need to just make that time where I just go upstairs and I open my Kindle or my phone to play the game. Like, I have to have a little bit of downtime.
Right.
But I have to say, like, the whole,
Do we have to assume that everyone knows what 50 Shades of Grey is?
Please, right. You were the one who introduced it, like, before even others, so please give them a little background.
Okay, well, I'm not nearly as far into the book as you are. So 50 Shades of Grey is basically porn.
Unless you've been living under a rock.
But. Yeah, it's it is pornography for the... it is pornography.
Okay.
It's basically about a young woman who falls hard, no pun intended, a gentleman called Christian Grey, and he's this very powerful business entrepreneur, blah, blah, blah. And
who apparently cocks his head to one side a lot.
You just have to keep saying that. So he has all these weird, I shouldn't say weird, I don't want to pass judgment. He's got fetishes, and he has fantasies, and he has, right? I mean, I haven't gotten to the good stuff yet, but I'm bored.
Yeah.
I'm bored.
Really?
I'm bored with the book. Yeah, I can't really... Yeah, not really. Huh. Maybe once I get past the first frilly pages,
See, I have to say, people talk about the book as being hot, and I was just like, whatever. It was actually the first frilly pages that my husband was pretty happy with me reading last week. I'm just saying.
My problem, and this is what I said to you, I read the book with a little bit too much, like, psychotherapy in my brain. Mm. Like, I'm not connecting with the characters, and I'm not really, it's not all that believable to me. But that's where I go. I can't just lose myself. That's how, like, crazed in my life I am, that I can't even just read a good old porn novel and get lost in it.
Yeah, but, here's the thing, and I agree with you, because, the beginning, when it wasn't, like, freaky-deaky, when it was, a little vanilla, as they like to say, I thought it was kind of hot. And then the freaky-deaky and, like, where he's coming from now... I have to say, as a mom, I'm like, what did they do to him? Like, and I need to know what they did to him so I can make sure that I don't do it to my kids.
Well,
and honestly, like, the whole adoption thing.
Right.
Like, I mean, he's adopted.
Okay,
he's
no spoiler alerts here. There's not, we're not spoiling anything.
We're not spoiling, yeah.
I'm just making sure people know.
Although we're the last two people to finish the book in all of the country. But, the man is adopted and that comes up and I just, and he can't be touched, and he just has these ways about him, and it scares me. Like, a part of me is like, oh my gosh, like, my daughter, you know, my daughter's adopted, and is there like a bonding thing that he didn't, you know, not a bondage thing, but like, yeah, so I'm agreeing with you that I read into it a little bit too much.
Yeah, but I think, you know, the only thing I did with, like, there was, you know, the very first sex scene in the book was actually slightly intimate, you know, and I was thinking, men should be reading this book as opposed to the Venus Mars series.
Right.
Like, they should be reading this book. But I get to edit out, I get to redact the parts I don't want them to read.
Right.
Like, you know, so that they can stay on cue, because I don't personally like to be tied up and all that fun stuff.
Whatevs,
right? But I don't know. I just, whatever. I don't know.
Speaking of which, shout out to voiceover guy who is on Magic City these days.
Magic City, yeah.
I don't know. For some reason, you said tied up and all that, and I just suddenly thought of
awkward
voiceover guy, because if, you know, someday we're going to have to reveal who that is. Well, if you watch Magic City, next week call us and tell us if you know which one is voiceover guy.
Does he have the voice in Magic City, though?
He
Sorry, voiceover guy. I have all of your episodes recorded. I have not gotten there yet.
He doesn't say, this you're listening to broadcast.
Ooh, I'll pay you $100 if you can slip that into one of your episodes. Right? Actors have a little freedom in what they can do, no?
Yeah, sure. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so.
Well, I just have to say that going back to 50 Shades for 1 second, you know, they're making it a movie, which is almost hilarious to me. That they're making that movie and that book into a movie. But anyway, there's all this controversy about who's going to be playing the lead characters. And I read somewhere that Selena Gomez from Wizards of Waverly Place is going to be playing the
Anna,
Anastasia, the hot woman in it. And I just found that to be so shocking. And so now I can't read it without thinking of her waving her wand around. Like,
right.
See, that's right. Where my mom and
well,
woman
from wands to whips. too many years in promo. We're getting some tweets, I have to say, as we, talking about,
can't make this stuff
Sandy
up.
Says, just finished book two, starting number three, fun downtime, biting my lip. I think that was a little, you know, stop biting your lip. So I actually tried it with my husband. He's like, you okay? You having a seizure? Yeah, exactly. He's like, why do you have a big fat lip?
Dude, nice.
Why is your lip scabbed?
Friend is on book three, and all she called me to say was, there's police car chases. I'm like, what? Don't go trying to make the book smart now.
Maybe she's messing with you.
Yeah, I don't know.
So I thought that was pretty funny. And thanks to, we're getting some lots of fun tweets. Kristen at Pretty Back is, she's on now and she's listening. Hi, Kristen. So anyway, I want to know what other people think too. Like, do they start to, if, especially if you're a parent, do you start to wonder like, who effed this guy up so bad? Like, and am I doing that to my kid?
What I love about it is that how free women are about expressing their feelings about this book and talking. I mean, it was the topic of your book club, you know, it was the book for your book club, and how willing and open people are to discuss this book. But if you ask them if they saw, you know, Debbie Does Dallas or, you know, Boobs McGee, you know, they wouldn't be willing to talk about it. But
right.
This book, women are willing to share their experiences and how it's impacted their marriages. And they're very open about their fantasies when it comes to this book. And I just find that really interesting that it sort of maybe broke some myths or, you know, preconceived notions about women and their sexuality and what turns women on. I don't know.
It goes back to when we had Wendy Miller from Playboy TV on like several weeks ago. And she was talking about, their TV for two and how men and women are watching adult shows together and that women are much more open to adult content. And I think, I know for me, and I'm pretty average, you know, I think I'm pretty average, you know, across the board. And it's aww. About, no, I mean, as far as like my tastes and, you know,
preferences.
Sure. But I just think that if there's a story and it's done well and you don't feel like somebody's being attacked or... You know what I mean? Like, if it's not like,
well, again, I haven't gotten to the freaky deaky parts yet, so I don't know that I can tell you if I feel that way. But I don't know. I mean, I'm just more again going back to like I'm all about the psychology of it, and I maybe I'm too blocked up with jealousy that I can't just enjoy it.
Or maybe you need to go out and get yourself laid. You heard it here, people. I'm sorry. Like, you know what? Sometimes I say things that are just, you're all thinking it. I'm sorry. And by the way, we haven't said it in a couple weeks. Kim is single and taking your calls. So.
Oh, God. So anyway. This is sadly a weird segue and really unfortunate and ridiculous that we did this.
Can we talk about Facebook?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's kind of a weird segue to go from.
Well, like, I don't think it's as weird as you think because there's, you know, mutually appreciated and agreed to, you know, agreed upon sexual relations. And then there's what not enough people, I think, stand up against because they're very, like, there's a confusion sometimes of what is
acceptable,
and what is okay and what is not.
Right.
And so what do you think of that?
I think that's a stretch, but I'm going to go with it.
Whatever.
Okay, so, of course, now I'm not going to be able to find the story. So, not today. It was a couple days ago. There was a story. That's funny. I just pulled up one about vibrators.
Yeah.
That sex offenders are arguing, they're suing, or they're going after Facebook for blocking them from social networking groups. And they feel like it's a violation of their freedom of speech because, what am I pointing at? Is it back here?
No.
Oh. Sorry. I know we're having total conversation offline here.
Right. Is there, against the freedom of speech. I have an opinion on this, and I'd love to hear yours, because I actually think I have an opinion that could surprise you.
Well, go. Tell me what it is.
I think that in some cases, I feel bad for certain registered offenders, because it was somebody maybe who was 17 years old.
Right.
And had relations, or 18 years old, and had relations with somebody who was 16, you know, years ago.
Right.
Or somebody who was caught in public, you know, having relations. Or, like, I mean, we all do this. We're like registered sex offender. It's like, oh my gosh, that's it. Like, that person needs to be, you know, forced out of our community, when that's not always the case. And so, but at the same time, I mean, I do believe that we should keep anybody who's had any sort of assault off of Facebook.
Well, it'd be interesting to ask Polly Franks, who's our guest that's coming up in the next segment, to see what she thinks about this issue. And I hope everyone will stay tuned, because I'm really excited to have Polly Franks on from the Franks Foundation. So please stay with us.
We will be right back.
I'm going to stay this time.
You are?
I'm not going to go anywhere.
All right, we'll be right back.
Broadcast. We'll be right back. What's ideal for you? Really, what's ideal for you? Being who you are, doing what you love, and getting out and about with friends. What's ideal for you? With your host, Janice Christopher, Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Central here on the Rockstar Radio Network. And it all starts with Janice doing just that. Then being open, curious, authentic, and living her life on a quest to discover everything that could possibly make life ideal. Check out the website, whatsidealforyou.com. Studies have shown that 80% of Americans, and probably everyone else too, dislike their work. 80%. The mission then is to turn that passion statistic around, to show how it is possible to live your passions and make a living, or live your passions so that you'll be able to mush through your job until you can change it and watch life's magic begin to happen. It's What's Ideal for You with your host, Janice Christopher, Tuesday evenings at 7 p.m. Central on the Rockstar Radio Network.
You're listening to Broadscast with Kim Goldman and Jackie McDougal, two broads with faces made for radio.
Welcome back. Let's just hop to it. I am excited to have Polly Franks on the show tonight. Polly is the founding board member of the National Coalition of Victims in Action. She's always also a co-chair of the Victims' Rights Constitutional Member Committee. What else can we say about she lobbied for the Children's Safety Act of, in 2005, the Amber Alert Act, and the Victims' Right Act. She's also the founder of the Franks Foundation. And I welcome both of us. Welcome, Polly, to the show. Polly, are you there?
Well, good evening, ladies. How y'all doing?
Hi, Polly. Thank you so much for joining us.
And staying up so late.
Oh, that's okay. No problem at all.
If you're anything like Jackie and I, you get all your best work done in the wee hours of the evening.
Pretty much.
Yes. So I don't want to do any editorializing for you. So why don't you give us a little bit of background about you and how you and why you started the Franks Foundation?
Well, it initially began when my children were victims of a predator who turned out to be somebody that we knew very well. We had had problems in the neighborhood for years, but, you know, peeping Tom stories, rape stories, all this. And it kind of held the neighborhood in fear for years. And come find out, you know, we knew him. I often tell people, what's more frightening than having a serial rapist stalk your neighborhood? And the answer to that is finding out you knew him.
Right,
and
right.
This is someone who's had access to my family and knew the layout of my home, knew my children's school bus number, and had a lot of information, like friends do, intimate information about our lives. And so he was arrested. They gave him a suspended sentence for what he had done to my children. I flew into an absolute maternal rage. Was told that I should be happy because this was the best they could do. We got a restraining order. My neighbors were seeing him in my yard in the middle of the night. I would
this
call
is
the
after
police.
He was arrested?
Excuse me?
He didn't stop. I mean, after he was arrested, he continued to come into your neighborhood, into your yard?
Absolutely. And I would call the police and they say, well, we talked to him and he says he didn't do it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, and so that's what we were dealing with. And I was so frustrated. They gave him a suspended sentence. They let him go. And at that point, I knew very little about this issue other than the fact that it existed. But I knew that the short time he spent in jail was not going to change him. He was what he was. And nobody was doing anything. So I just decided, I was just so angry, I had to put my rage somewhere, or it was going to kill me. And so I became a licensed private investigator and decided to go after him myself. And
wow.
that was easier said than done. It took 3.5 years. The short and best story is he's now in prison for life without parole, which is the good news. The bad news, he was linked to at least 286 victims between the states of Texas and Virginia.
Oh my gosh. So I was going to ask you, we read up on you and I know a little bit about you from just, you know, we follow each other on Facebook. So, you wrote in the bio, it says that he was known as the San Antonio ski mask rapist, right? Is this before or after he assaulted your daughters?
This was before. This was in the early 80s. And he had been captured and brought to trial in San Antonio. And they had decided, this jury, which I'm ashamed to say was comprised of mostly women, instead
wow.
of giving him prison, they decided to treat him instead, that he was a good person who did bad things. And so they sent him to Johns Hopkins to get chemical castration, which was supposed to make him impotent. If I can say that word on your show, I don't know if I can or not.
You can say anything you want, Polly.
Which was ludicrous because, as we all know, sex crimes are not about testosterone levels.
Right.
It's about control and anger, rage, all of that.
Right.
So they sent him there, and this was so bizarre. They were so proud of his progress that they featured him on 60 Minutes in January of 84 as their reformed rapist.
Oh.
And even after all that public attention, he was allowed to move into my Richmond, Virginia neighborhood without any kind of supervision.
So I'm assuming, I mean, the attack on your daughters happened in 1995, right?
Yes.
So back in 1995, what kind of laws were in place at that point? And, you know, what kind of things were in place to let people know, you know, that there's a pedophile amongst you or that, you know, there's a rapist in your neighborhood? I mean, it's so different now.
Nothing that I know of. This was just before the passage of Megan's Law, which is why I will fight for Megan's Law to my dying day, because we had no way of knowing. And as I'm sure you know, if you watch the news at all, you can't tell by looking at these people. This predator was a very polite person, very nice person, very friendly, seemed very shy, seemed like he wouldn't even have the guts to step on a bug, let alone hurt anybody. And so if we had had that, if we'd had the sex offender registry, I know that I, being the mother that I am, I would have looked it up and I would have found him. But at this, we had no way of knowing, absolutely no way of knowing. The authorities at Johns Hopkins and in Texas had left him to monitor himself. And, in fact, the psychiatrist dismissed him from the program and said, send us a postcard if you have any problems.
Wow.
Report by mail. You know, in other words, drop us a line if you rape anybody. But other than that, sayonara.
So, Polly, how did you meet him?
He lived around the corner from us. He was one of our neighbors, and his daughter was best friends with my daughter. And as parents do, we interacted at PTA meetings and birthday parties and sleepovers and all of that kind of thing that parents do. And he was this girl's father, and we became very good friends. His wife became one of my best friends.
Oh, so he was married and...
Mm-hmm. He had a nice home. They kept the grass cut. They didn't throw parties too late. You know what I'm saying? They were good neighbors.
Right. And you knew nothing about his past? Like, the daughter never shared anything with her friend? Like, there was you knew nothing?
Well, this had happened before the daughter was born, and frankly, I don't think she knew.
Oh, right, right.
Mm-hmm. She was 9 years old when this happened, so she would not have known.
Yeah. I mean, and back then, I mean, he could get married and go without his new wife knowing.
Right.
Well, she had been his nurse at the sex offender treatment facility.
She was...
Oh my gosh.
That's where they met and fell in love. Isn't that romantic?
Yeah. Okay, Polly, I have to say, just before we go any further, I think I might be a little in love with you and your sense of humor and the way that you, I mean, you know, with everything that you do, I mean, first of all, you kick ass, but secondly, like you have this thing about you that when you tell the story and it's like, you're relatable and you make people listen as opposed
to, thank you.
Sometimes, you know, you can hear some of this and it's, I mean, God, I can't imagine what you went through, but sometimes to hear it, it's just too much, you know, and we all fear like, oh, and we shut down and we can't even talk about it. And you deliver in such a way that it's like, okay, now let's keep going. Like, let's, and I think that I can imagine already that the work you do and the way you make people pay attention, is just so important.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, you know, I needed a positive place to put it because I was in so much pain and so much rage and so much frustration, frankly, with the system that kept giving him a pass. That was serving him, frankly, and not serving my children at all. So it was very therapeutic to be able to do something.
And then how do you go from, I mean, did you have any sort of background? Like, suddenly you're a private investigator. Did you go from, like, no sort of education in that? I mean, is that how it goes?
No. At the time, I was a receptionist at an insurance company. So I had no background in that whatsoever. But I had always been intrigued by becoming a PI, but it was one of those back burner things because life takes over and you just don't get a chance to do it.
Right.
And so I, this was the only way I was going to be able to do it, was to find out basically how to stalk. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice. Sorry. Okay. How to stalk the stalker.
Right.
And turn the tables on this SOB. And like I said, it took 3 years. It wasn't, you know, a fast thing. But
did he know that you were after him? I mean, how did you protect yourself? I mean, he had to have, you know, remembered you. I mean, he remembered, I would assume, or maybe they don't, you know remember who their victims are. I mean, did he know?
Well, he knows now, but at the time, he didn't consider me a threat. I have a physical disability, and I think he just saw us as sitting ducks and an easy mark. And just assumed that, you know, I would just roll over and play nice. And that is kind of an advantage, though, to be underestimated can be a great help.
Well, you know, but stay on that point for 1 second, because before, you know, the show started, Jackie and I were talking about you and, you know, we were saying, like, I wonder if were there signs or the things that you noticed about him that you thought were off or that your kids thought about him that you just sort of blew off because maybe he was just a little strange or
shy.
You know, in hindsight, are you able to look back and think, oh, you know, I saw it and I missed it?
Yes. In hindsight, I do. Of course, we all have 20/20 hindsight, but I know one day he came over to my oldest daughter, who was 15 at the time, had been their family babysitter. And I was supposed to be at work, but I'd gotten sick and had to come home, thank God. But she was there by herself, and he had come over supposedly to give her a birthday gift, which I thought was kind of odd. Hmm. And then he stayed for a while, and then he left. He was just acting kind of, something was off. But at the time, I there's so much else going on in life, I really didn't take any stock by it until, of course, later. And then not long after that, the same daughter had woken me up in the middle of the night because she said there was a man outside her bedroom window trying to get in. Oh. And that will wake you up. I don't care how sound asleep you are. Those words will, you know, bring you right back. But what we could not understand was the fact that our dogs did not bark. Our outdoor dogs did not bark, but they knew him.
Yeah.
He made friends with our dogs.
Right.
So those two who would tear up a UPS man or a mailman or a pizza delivery guy, the one night when we need him to bark, they didn't utter a peep.
You know what? Just in a weird, silly segue, when my brother was murdered, that was like the one piece of evidence that was so compelling that the dogs didn't bark.
Right.
Yeah.
When the attack happened,
right.
Because, you know,
So Polly,
obviously, you know, we don't need to know the intricate details of what happened to your daughter, but how did they come to you? How did they share with you that happened? Because I think that's the one thing that we as parents, you know, always wish and hope that our kids know to tell and, you know, know how to tell and parents know how to respond.
I think that's sometimes equally as conflicting for the kids is how to tell somebody they trust because they don't want to be in trouble themselves.
Right.
Right. Well, the blessing for us was that the children were asleep. You know, as females, we all did the ritual of having sleepovers at a friend's house. Mm-hmm. And this happened about 5 o'clock in the morning. By that point, thankfully, they were out cold pretty much. And so they didn't know anything was going on until the wife walks in the living room, catches him and starts screaming at him. That's how they woke up. Up to that point, they didn't know anything was going on. So we were fortunate in that respect. And at the time, they were ages 8 and 9, and these girls didn't even know what sex was.
Right.
And so I've tried to be very careful about what I said to them, mm-hmm. because I didn't want to make it worse, as if that's possible. I didn't want to make the situation worse. But I also wanted to find a way to find out exactly what had happened without telling them more than they needed to know.
Right.
At that time. And I knew I was completely out of my league, so I called our pediatrician, and I called the guidance counselor at school who talked to both of them, and the pediatrician also told me what to look for. Mm-hmm. But we didn't find out for 2 days. The wife, who had been my friend, sat on this. This happened in the wee hours of a Saturday morning. We found out the following Monday night. We had no idea.
And the daughters didn't have any, you know, shift in mood or?
Well, when I asked them later, they said that the girl, and I'll call this man's daughter Amy. Amy had been very embarrassed about her parents having this screaming match in front of her friends, and that her mom threw her dad out, and she asked my girls to don't tell anybody because she was embarrassed.
Oh.
And so they felt they had to keep not saying anything because they had promised her that they would not tell.
Right. And so I'm guessing the wife didn't throw him out for good at that point.
Oh, well, at that point, she finally did, yes.
Okay. But at this point, you're... I mean, it's the thing that we are. I mean, I still don't let my boys, you know, my oldest just turned 8, like still doesn't go into public restrooms. Like I know that I have a tendency to be a little bit, if you had to choose, on the overprotective side, but you know, it's stories like this too, that like, I mean, it's the people that we trust. It's not always these random. So now you've got somebody that you trusted, that you knew, and you've got the fight of your life in front of you. So tell us a little bit about, like, I mean, what happened to finally put him behind bars? Was it another attack, or was it what?
Well, happened? It was. My PI instructor, who was a great guy, who's also a police officer, he told me, he said, time is on your side. And he said, even though I was incredibly frustrated, because frankly, I wanted to just horsewhip this guy and tie him up and, you know, catch him on fire and do all kinds of bad things to him. But he said, this is an addiction that he has, and addicts are their own worst enemy. He will trip up. He will. And I was just so cynical and jaded at that point, because my whole view of the police and law enforcement was completely skewed from what I'd been raised to believe. But sure enough, yeah, he broke into, they caught him breaking into another home occupied by children. And finally, they decided, well, hey, let's do a DNA test. And they found two hits, you know, and they suspected, like I said, they suspected him and all these others as well. But if they had just run a DNA, done the DNA test when my girls were attacked, that could have saved a lot of other victims. But they just ran this thing through like it was nothing and wanted to be done with it.
I started writing something recently about law enforcement and how we're all raised to, you know, keep them in this you know, ethereal place, and they're, you know, up on a pedestal. And for the most part, I do believe that law enforcement are all good and decent and ethical and all the things that they should be when they wear that badge. It's really hard to think that, you know, all of these little mishaps, and I say that with, you know, tongue in cheek, but all these little, you know, areas that they didn't do their job properly or didn't know how to, or the systems weren't in place or whatever it was, you know, when you say that there was more than 286, you know, assaults, it just blows my mind. And I it just sickens me, like that he was able to run amok for so long.
Right.
Oh, absolutely. And it was almost like living in a parallel universe, because everything that I had grown up to believe, I mean, it was just weird. I was hearing law enforcement almost, and I realized I was very sensitive to this at the time, but it was almost like they were defending him. When they made the arrest for what he had done to my girls, the police officer seemed to be really sympathetic to him. She kept telling me how he broke down and cried in the back of the police car. And I'm like, yeah, you put cuffs on me and slipped me in the back of the car. Yeah, I'll cry. And then they said, well, we've got him under suicide watch because he's threatened to kill himself. And I'm like, hey, that's cool. Go ahead. You know, I'll bring the rope. But they told me I wasn't being very nice. And, you know, but so it was just very, very bizarre that they were so protective of him and not of my children at all.
I think sometimes we, you know, have the ability to get so crazy in the middle of a trauma that we can just kind of get so wrapped up. And so to be able to stop, and you did this, you've done this too, Kim, but like to stop and recognize and advocate, you know, and become an advocate for not only your own family, but for other people. I find it amazing. So I'm Polly. Do we have you back on the line?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay.
So let me ask you, you know, you talk about advocacy work, you know, and I want you to tell us a little bit about what you're currently doing in that realm. But, you know, it takes a whole other person inside you to be able to go be an advocate and to continue to fight the fight. How does that fare on your family and on your marriage? I mean, are they supportive of what you do, even though you have
absolutely
a passion that they don't support, maybe?
Yeah, absolutely. They've been 100% behind me all the way. I have kept my girls out of the media. The media has quite often wanted to photograph them or interview them, and I have emphatically said absolutely not, because I was not going to make my children the poster girls for sexual abuse. My husband's very supportive, and of course he was at the time in such a daddy rage. He was going to kill this guy. I mean, he was very, very adamant that he was going to do this, which is what something husbands and fathers do a lot, you know, if they think their family's in danger. So they've been very, very supportive of me, and it opened up a whole world to me that has been very healing, and able to put it my particular case in perspective. Individuals such as yourself and so many others who've been through so much worse than what we've been through, I'm very, very aware that we had a happy ending, which is something most people don't get.
Right.
And I'm extremely aware of that. And so that, you know, I've dealt with parents of murdered children, teenagers who have survived school shootings, many, many things. And it really does open your eyes and give you an appreciation for what you have. And yes, this was horrible, and no, I would never want to go through it again, but it it could have been worse. And that's been very healing. That's been, you know, you put it all, it's all a matter of relativity.
You know, one of the things that has always been interesting to me is that, you know, the collateral damage, you know, the things get left behind. I mean, how has your life been turned upside down, your daughter's, and, you know, how you would, you know, going forward, I mean, this was obviously a choice that you made to kind of try to impact the lives of other people. So, you know, how do you balance in your life?
That's a good question. Some times are harder than others. Some cases you get involved with take more out of you than others. So it is hard, but I think what I've learned from this is to never take my family for granted and right. to try to basically pace myself and realize that there are limits to what I can do. I liken advocacy to being like a emergency room physician. You know, you can help some people, and sometimes when the case gets to you, it's too far gone. You mm-hmm. can't help. Mm-hmm. But you do what you can. And you need to just remember to take time and appreciate the joy that you do have in your life.
Right.
And keep family traditions up. Take time out. I mean, everybody needs to pace themselves. If you burn yourself out, you're not going to be good for anybody.
Right.
So, yeah, it's been hard to learn because I do have kind of I want to save the world complex, and so mm-hmm. that's been frustrating.
Right. So Paula, can we talk a little bit about, I mean, what can parents, I mean, we all, like I said, I'm a freak when it comes to, you know, public restrooms. I mean, Kim and I were just reading a story about a California man who was caught in Walmart sexually assaulting a boy who was, you know, the kids go over and they play the video games at Walmart and they're distracted. And this man was said to go over and sexually assault, you know, a child while he was doing that. And then they caught it on video the next day. But come to find out, they've identified at least five more victims, and there could be more than 20
Absolutely.
Victims that, you know, and so, I mean, obviously we don't want to create these parents, these helicopter parents, as they're labeled, you know, and I have the tendency to kind of go over the top when I hear stories. Like, how can we have the balance of being aware and protect our children without, you know, making our kids nervous wreck?
Well, that's a good question, because I was accused of being an overprotective mother before this ever happened. I would make sure the whole house was locked up, and my husband would call our house Fort Knox because I always had to have everything locked up. And then this happens anyway because we let him in through the front door. So
right.
That's a good question. One thing I tell people always, check your sex offender registry. That's something you can do. Parents would die to protect their children. You know, and I'm not asking anybody to die. Check mm-hmm. what I tell people is check the sex offender registry, because we did not have that. And if we had had that information, our entire situation was preventable, would have been preventable. I always recommend familywatchdog.us because it's
okay.
nationwide. And if you have relatives across the country, you know, they can check it as well.
Right.
And you can sign up for monthly email updates. Does not cost a dime. It takes less than 5 minutes out of your time to do this. And it can save your, you know, could save a life, or it could save someone from becoming falling prey to someone like this. So that's the first thing I always tell people, is check your registry. It's there.
Mm-hmm.
People have fought hard to have it up there, and that's what we need to do. Secondly, I think is just don't forget good old fashioned common sense.
Right.
And you know, it's hard for parents to deal with this, you know, but for instance, don't leave the kids alone either in a public situation or even in the yard for any period of time. Mayberry is gone. You know, I wish it's gone. And it makes me sad, but we have to deal with it.
But do you really believe that Mayberry ever existed? I mean, that's,
right.
You know, we have this conversation, like, that's a fictitious TV show area, you know, neighborhood. Like, I mean, I think that we all get that. Like, we're all looking for Mayberry in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
I mean, Kim and I were just reading in Oxnard where this happened with this, you know, man in Walmart. And, oh, I can't believe it happened here. I can't believe, like, there are people everywhere. And I don't
right.
mean it to be over the top, but
They're everywhere. It's not like, oh, you go to the city or you go, people are everywhere.
Okay.
When this could happen.
Before you answer, we're going to go to break. So, Polly, I want you to think of a really great retort. And we'll be right back. So, if you can stay with us, I hope you do. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. More from the Broads when we come back.
Get ready for resources, tools, and support to help you build a successful business and live an awesome life. It's the Women's Business Success Show with your host, founder of the Association of Women Entrepreneurs, Tara McHugh. Thursdays at 11 a.m. Central here on the Rockstar Radio Network. Each show will feature a special guest interview. Tara will bring you highly successful entrepreneurs sharing their stories of success. You'll hear about the challenges they faced along their journey together with the advice they have to help you achieve more. You'll also hear from various personal and business development experts sharing tips, solutions, and strategies that you can easily implement into your business and life for amazing results. For more on Tara and her show, check out our website, aofwe.com. Then join us for the Women's Business Success Show with your host, the founder of the Association of Women Entrepreneurs, Tara McHugh. Thursdays at 11 a.m. Central here on the Rockstar Radio Network.
Listening to Broadscast with Kim Goldman and Jackie McDougal, with topics as broad as their butts. Well, at least Jackie's.
We are back. I'm sorry. Oh, wait. Now are you Molly laughing at that one? It's funny.
As far as, you know, we don't want to be helicopter parents, obviously, but right. We're trying to somehow, we go on the sex, the register, and we check that out. But what are other, you mentioned some of the signs that you even saw with this man, and not just, him coming to the window, but did you feel like that did your kids ever get that, that feeling in their gut, like there's something going on, or other cases that you've worked with where you felt the same way? I mean, what are some of the things that we can, some of the signs we can pay attention to?
Well, a lot of it, like I said, is common sense. The public bathroom situation, if you're out somewhere, use your head. It's not a crime to take a six-year-old boy into a lady's room if you have to. Watch their internet use. One night my children told me they were talking to somebody in California. We're in Virginia. And I said, there's no way that you can confirm this person's in California. This could be some perv living around the corner from our house. You have to empower your child, and you can
right.
do it in a positive way. But one of the things I think most parents of our generation don't realize is that our children are a lot more with it and a lot more savvy and sophisticated than we ever were at that age. They're
mm-hmm.
a lot more worldly. And so
right.
I think without scaring them, the world is doomed or whatever, I think you can tell them. For instance, there was a case where I was a guest on Court TV radio, and a mother in Yonkers, New York, fortunately was listening, and she checked the website. She found a predator two doors down from her house. She sat her 8-year-old son down, told him what was going on. They developed a secret password between the two of them. That whoever, anybody tried to pick him up, if they didn't know the password, he was not to go with this person.
Right.
Sure enough, 2 days later, the perv comes over to this child playing in the yard and says, I just talked to your mom on the phone. We're going to order pizza. We got video games. She says, you can come on over. And, of course, the boy gives him what's the password? The guy doesn't know. So he runs in the house.
Oh, my gosh.
Mom gets on the phone, calls 911, and the perv's taken away. She empowered the child. This is what you can do. Being in denial is not a good thing. I can't tell you how many parents have told me, well, we live in a really nice neighborhood, so I'm sure we don't have any predators. And I don't care if you're in the trailer parks or if you're in a million-dollar gated community, you've got an equal chance of having a predator in your neighborhood. And I hate to,
right.
to bust some people's balloons, but, I had a particular person who was once very haughty about saying she did not have this. Once I finally dragged her, basically kicking and screaming, to the website, to her horror, she found 16 within a mile of her house.
Wow.
And so that was a learning experience for her. But, and of course it depends on the age of the child. But I think, first of all, they know more than we think they know.
Yeah.
With a certain age, they're exposed to media all the time, internet, TV, all of this. And what they don't hear from that, they hear from a friend.
So, you know, Polly, do you find, well, I don't know if there is a difference, but do you find that there's more shame with the children experiencing it or the parents that couldn't or feel the guilt for not being able to protect their child from it?
Well, as a mother who went through that, yes, I mean, I felt horrible. I mean, it has taken me years, and I'm probably still not to the point where I have forgiven myself. Two things I told my children when this happened and have told them repeatedly through the years is, number one, it's not your fault.
Right.
Under
right.
No, 100% his fault, 0% your fault. Mm-hmm. Number two is most men are not like this. I didn't want them growing up fearful of men.
Right.
You know, I said, you know, keep in mind your father, your grandfathers, your uncles, they would die to protect you.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, we had the misfortune of being near this person, but most men are not like this. I did not want them to grow up to be just, you know, shut down where men were concerned. I said,
right.
Of course, men have other problems, but they're not all a bunch of pervs. you know, but, you know, you have to tell a child that repeatedly. I cannot tell you how many adults that I have encountered who are my age and older who are carrying around guilt because something happened and they blame themselves.
And, you know, right. The other thing that I want to point out, you just, you know, we're talking a lot about male, you know, perpetrators, and I, you know, there's plenty of stories where there are female perpetrators. I mean, obviously the statistics are not as high, but that's the
right.
One thing that I have really struggled with my son is, you know, I don't ever attach a gender to an attacker because I don't want him to get confused or to have a false sense of trust because
right.
Someone's a woman. And, you know, like I said, the statistics are not as high, but, you know, I think that that's a point that we need to make. Just
oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But since our offender was a man, that's why I put that there. But yes, and but it's so strange, ladies. I get these so many emails from across the country, and what really frustrates me is when people don't believe the child. The mothers don't believe
right.
The child.
Right.
How many times, I have to ask you, Polly, have you seen that, you know, a mom will get involved with a guy, and she has her own baggage that she's so interested in being, you know, paid attention to or being involved with somebody, being in a relationship, that she's the one who turns the blind eye, you know, to somebody that she's invited into her home?
Absolutely. I had a case. I was in a meeting on Capitol Hill in Washington in the office of Senator Orrin Hatch, and there was a woman sitting at the table who was fighting us on the Adam Walsh Child Protection Act.
Mm.
Her husband or boyfriend, whatever it was, had sexually assaulted her teenage daughter, and she was furious at this girl for saying anything about it. She said she was trying to, you know, reunite her family and keep her home together. And I just looked at this woman. I could not believe what I was hearing coming out of a mother's mouth.
Right.
But there are, and yeah, I mean, I hear this all the time, you know, mom wouldn't believe the boyfriend because he's paying the bills or because
right.
She just has some emotional need. She can't be without a man. She has
right.
To have a man.
Right.
That's
so,
where she gets all of her identity and validation. She has to have the man. Which is something, frankly, I mean, I'm a happily married person for many years, but I just can't understand because to me, once you're a mother first before everything else.
Right.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I have been married 10 years this year, and my husband is, you know, my world along with the kids. But I have to say, like, even the smallest hint, I can't even imagine. First of all, but I can't imagine then something like that just sweeping it under the rug, you know?
Oh, absolutely. This woman was telling me that her husband had just been going through a hard time, which is why he assaulted their 13-year-old daughter. You know, he was just going through a rough time. And when I got out of the meeting, I told my friend that, you know, my husband's a wonderful man, but if he had ever done that, he'd have been dead before he hit the ground.
Right.
I wouldn't even need a gun.
Talk to us a little bit about, you know, we have a couple minutes left in the show, so I want to make sure that we get some other things in here. You know, with the onset of the internet being what it is these days and cyber stalking and, you know, it just being a cesspool for predators, you know, do you have any tips for parents and for kids to how to protect themselves against online attacks and assaults?
Well, first of all, monitor what your kids are doing. Don't leave them you know, to have unfettered access to anything by themselves. You have to, because they're curious. they're going to want to see what's out there. And unfortunately, you have to convey to them that some adults are not honest and that some adults are not good people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a tough one to have to, you know, because you don't want to raise a child that's completely jaded and cynical and scared of the world. But right. They've got to know what's out there.
Do you think it's okay to put a little fear in them about what the dangers are? And how do you walk that line? I think you guys talked a little bit about it, but how do you instill just the perfect amount of fear?
Well, I think if you show them a story on the news, something that's happened mm-hmm. to another child, somebody their age that they can relate to, and say, you know, look, Susie, whatever her name is, saw some, you know, made friends with some person. He turned out to be a very sick, disgusting, ill person. Show them this is the example. Don't think it can't happen to you.
Right.
But take it from the attitude of empowerment. You know, that you're not going to let yourself be conned by this. And like I said, with my own case, with my kids who were in the chat room, I said, just because he says he's 16 years old and in California does not mean he's 16 years old or in California.
Right.
Right. You know, Polly, I have to tell you a quick story that I don't even think I've talked about publicly at all. But my 8-year-old, who has been 7, he got an iPod from his grandparents, and we allowed certain apps, and none of, you know, no Facebook, none of that. I mean, come on. I'm one of 13 kids. Like, I ruled the way I was ruled. You know what I mean? But
absolutely.
But he words with friends, and he plays against me. But the thing is, he saw me. I've played against random people. And he mm-hmm. hit random one day. And you can chat on Words with Friends.
Really?
And he had a full-on conversation with a girl, possibly a girl, 7 years old. And I will say, for, you know, full disclosure, my son's on the autism spectrum, so social behavior is certainly not something that, you know, is common. I mean, it's something we've worked on. So for him, he starts chatting with somebody and starts asking her, like, can I take you out to dinner? Like, I mean, he was like flirting. I mean, if you read my son's chat, you would have thought he was a 30-year-old pervert, you know, like, but he was a 7-year-old boy who,
right.
I don't know that he realized he was playing a real person or what, like he was playing, you know, and he was trying some things out and experimenting and
sure.
you know, never thinking that, like, first of all, the girl is not 7 and she's like, I have a BF. Like, you don't know what a BF is, a boyfriend, you know, like, I mean,
right.
She was having a conversation with him like he was an adult. And mm-hmm. so it was very interesting. But I just wanted to throw that out there. I know we only have a couple minutes left, but that it's not just those chat rooms. It's not just, I mean, there are so many apps now that have a chat feature that parents really need to be diligent.
Absolutely. And if they're blocks, use them. You know what I'm saying? Internet use for anything other than school is a privilege, not a right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know I won't score any points with the Children of America for saying that, but it's the
yeah,
truth.
Yeah, whatever.
You know what
they can go to bed. They should be sleeping right now anyway.
Absolutely. Heck with them, you know, but it is a privilege. It's not a right. You do, you know, I would not let my child be closed up in the room or in another room for, you know, unlimited amount of time unsupervised, because you just can't imagine what's out there. You know what?
As we wrap up, Polly, I just want to tell you I am in awe of your strength and your integrity and the way that you've handled yourself and the advocate that you've become. We hope that your daughters are doing okay, and we want to make sure people visit you at franksfoundation.org, and they can follow you on Twitter and Facebook and keep up with all the good things that you're doing. And I hope that you'll come back and let us know all the things that you may need in the future.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Molly. We'll have more information on our website.
This has been Broadscast with Kim Goldman and Jackie McDougall. For more from the Broads or to submit a topic or guest request, visit broadscast.com.
You're listening to TogiNet.